Pele leaned in and said something to Freddie.
Don't let them change you. Keep working on what makes you different and what makes you special. It was great advice, but it caused me some problems.
But what could change Freddie Adu?
Soccer is going to explode, and it's going to be around this kid.
We were the Beatles. Everywhere we went, it was the Freddie show.
And with that came the expectation, and with that came the pressure.
New episodes of American Prodigy drop Tuesdays from Blue Wire Podcasts.
Blue Wire.
Welcome back. This is the Big Blue Banter New York Giants football podcast. I'm Dan Schneier, joined as always my co-host Nick Filato. We come to you tonight after the Giants lost 26-7 to the Arizona Cardinals in Week 14. It was a deflating loss after obviously they built a lot of momentum with their four-game winning streak over these last 5 weeks because one of them was the bye week. Things have probably changed as far as the playoff picture goes. We're going to get into all of that as well on this podcast. There's some overarching issues that I want to touch on that really don't stem from this specific loss to me. It's a buildup, and they shouldn't just be brushed under the rug as, you know, one bad game because they've been on tape, at least in my mind, the entire season. And, you know, when you look at this team and you consider the potential of the status quo likely to come back, at least in my mind, and that means offensive coordinator Jason Garrett, quarterback Daniel Jones, and general manager Dave Gettleman for the 2021 season and for the 2021 offseason, a big shaping moment. There at least should be questions. We should at least explore the possibility of if this is right. We shouldn't just buy into the herd community that says any criticism you ever say of this team after their four-game winning streak is unfair. Because again, this team has beaten, with the exception of that amazing game against the Seahawks, there's really not any credible wins in my mind on this schedule this season. So we need to answer all those questions. We need to figure out where they're at. We need to figure out how the playoff picture is shaping up for the Giants now. So where do we want to start, Nick? Let's start with this. How are you feeling? Are you as deflated as I am after this? I'm trying to hide it. I'm trying to be a good person for the people, but I don't know, man.
It's not good. That was a poor performance, especially when you consider that the other three NFC teams end up winning. The likelihood of making the playoffs is still there, but it obviously got a lot worse. They're not in the driver's seat anymore, and you allowed a struggling Arizona Cardinals team to come into your home and beat you physically. It's kind of nuts when you think about it, man. They were not just blitzing like crazy. They were getting pressure with four men. The Giants couldn't handle the stunts up front. I don't know what happened to the protections. Kevin Zeitler looked terrible. Shane Lemieux had a bunch of bad reps. Andrew Thomas didn't look great. Matt Parrott looked horrendous on a couple different reps that I saw. And again, I haven't watched the All-22 yet, but these are just from watching the broadcast angle. I saw Zeitler twice get beat by well-timed stunts. And I'm like, what the heck is going on right now? And you're doing this with a hobble Daniel Jones who can't move to begin with. It was just a very disappointing outing from the New York Giants. And you got to blame the coaching staff, something that we've applauded. You got to blame the players as well. The defense, I think you can give an excuse to because they were out there for 70 plays or something absolutely ridiculous, but down the stretch they couldn't get a stop on third down whatsoever. And then the offense couldn't mount any type of drives. So it was just a very, very frustrating game in a spot where we had a lot of hope.
Yeah, I think you said it best. There's so much to unpack there. I don't know where I want to start here, Nick, so I'll start one by one. I'll start with what you said last, which is we had a lot of hope going into this game. Both of us, I was as confident as I've been about this Giants team in years going into this game, in years. And it's because I thought they would continue to build on what they showed over the last 4 weeks from a physical standpoint on offense and what they've kind of accomplished in their run game. I thought they would create more opportunities in the passing game just because Jones is coming in versus McCoy. And then on the flip side of the ball, I thought they got to a point after last week's game where they were really just in every week shut down defense. And agreed, I'm giving the defense a major excuse here because of how pathetic the offense was in the first half and throughout the game. Just absolutely pathetic performance that should not be excused in my mind because the Giants are now 31st in scoring this year. They are one of the worst offenses in the NFL. Enough of the excuses, enough of saying things are going right. 31st in the NFL, and they've played plenty of cupcakes in my mind. Or not plenty, but enough to not be 31st. But the point is, I'll give the defense some excuse, but at the same time, in the second half, Arizona definitely made a nice adjustment in their passing game and started creating big plays in the passing game. In both halves, the Giants were unable to get pressure with their front four. In the first half, they were able to get some coverage plays that led to punts for Arizona. Obviously, NFL is a game of variance. Last week, the Giants got a fumbled snap by Russell Wilson on a 3rd-and-1 that he was easily going to run for a first down, and it led to a turnover instead of the Seahawks scoring. They got a tip pick. This week, They forced a fumble that was returned all the way to the goal line. Then, and they didn't score, but then they got great field position and scored on the next drive. And then a fumbled kickoff. So there's a high variance to this game. And when those plays happen, you don't tend to win games. And that's fine. But this wasn't a game where the Giants lost like 20-17. And the reason they lost is because of those high variance plays. This was a game where they got completely dominated.
And those high variance plays, too, the Giants forced Kenyon Drake to fumble twice, and they didn't recover either of those.
Exactly.
And the game, it could have been different, maybe. But again, you can't make those excuses when you lose by 19 points at home.
Yeah. And for me, why I can't fully say it could have been different, maybe, is because this offense did absolutely nothing over and over and over again. And in the first half, the defense gave them plenty of opportunities. This Cardinals offense barely moved the ball in the first half. Most of their scoring drives were off their short field, and they had unbelievable field position, which is a product of the Giants' pathetic offense. The Giants had 159 yards of offense. They went 3 of 12 on third down. They converted a fourth down. They had 49 plays and just 159 yards of offense. The ineptitude to have 49 plays, 159 yards of offense cannot be understated, and it cannot be brushed under the rug as an aberration, because this is the 31st scoring team. Daniel Jones has thrown next to no touchdown passes this entire season. They don't have explosive plays on offense. We look at the tape, and we're getting excited about a few deep balls against Washington and Philly and Cincinnati. That can't be our bar. For me, I can't set the bar at getting excited at two or three deep balls a game. I just can't set the bar. When I'm watching the Saints play the Eagles and I see the whole offense is designed for clear out routes, and the whole offense is designed to open up the defense by running routes up the seam and using vertical attacking style. And then you watch the 3rd and 5 earlier in this game, a key play in this game, because it was the momentum had not flipped yet to the Cardinals. And every single route is breaking to the sideline short, and except for one deep, like, over out route, and everything's covered, and it's a coverage sack. It's a coverage mishap, and the Giants have to punt.
And that's a play they run a lot, too.
That pivot play Garrett runs a lot.
I don't like that play. I really don't.
I don't like that play either, but ultimately, I don't really like much of the design of Garrett's passing game. While occasionally there's some deep routes that get open, some one-on-ones that Daniel Jones has done a decent job of diagnosing and putting on the spot, that doesn't really speak to the coordinator in my mind at all. And then you have issues that I think are overarching, like when you're down 20-7 and you call a 3rd-and-1 deep fade, and again, it's not the worst ball in the world, but if you're a franchise quarterback, you need to make that throw. If we're going to just assume and lock in Daniel Jones as a franchise quarterback, and I took a lot of flack a few weeks ago against Tampa for saying that I think on a scale of 1 to 10, there's a 2 that he'll be here in 5 years. People think that's a crazy take. How? Why? What are we just... Do you know how hard it is to be a franchise quarterback? Like, the Jets are going to move on from Sam Darnold, who showed promise in his rookie season. You know, this is consistent. So if you're going to throw that pass, though, you have to go for it on 4th-and-1. It's 20-7. You have to take that chance. The game's over if you punt.
See, I'm not going to knock Jason Garrett for that, because there was a concept to the boundary. It was towards where the camera was for the TV that Cain Smith was wide open.
I'm not knocking Garrett for that. I'm not knocking.
I think people would. The thing I don't like about Garrett, or the thing that I have problems with Garrett, is sometimes, like in this game, the tempo wasn't all that great. I didn't really like the fact that he came out with Alf at the beginning of the fourth quarter and ran the football when you had Wayne Gallman having such a good game. There's little things like that. I think he can be a little bit predictable. Is definitely another thing that I think you can criticize Jason Garrett for. But some of those deep passes that Jones made, those were products of Jones. That was Jones making a decision, because there were actually concepts right by the sticks, which we talk about with Jason Garrett, that were actually open. And I do appreciate Jones's aggressiveness, but you got to make that throw. And you have to. And again, let's be fair. He was playing hobbled. Like, I think that's a fair take. The Giants rolled him out twice in this game. They rolled him right, I think, 2 times in this game. The first time it was like, all right, he looked okay. That was in the first quarter. And then they did it late in the third, I think it was, maybe in the beginning of the fourth. And you could just tell it was not right whatsoever at that point.
Yeah, the Jones injury situation obviously played a role in this. But just focusing in on the plays that were available to us and what we did see, I don't have a problem with Garrett on the play, but if you're supposed to be this franchise quarterback that we're for some reason locking in because you had a 3-game stretch of improvement against Washington, Philly, and Cincy, but ultimately have been pretty bad all season, you have to make those throws. Those aren't easy throws, that throw to Shepard, but it was a makeable throw. You see guys make them all the time, the actual franchise quarterbacks, the ones who, in my mind, have at least proven it. And again, I'm not giving up on Jones. Don't declare these takes as definitive.
Yeah.
I still think there's potential there, but I'm not sold on him like so many Giants fans seem to be, and I can't figure out why. But again, my issue with that is if you're going to take that shot on third and one, why are you punting the football on fourth and one? Because they say you have to because you're inside your own 30? It's 20-7. Your only chance of winning that game is if you don't punt the ball to the 50 and give up your field position. You have to go for it. You have to come up with a fourth and one play. It's 1 yard to gain. It's not that hard. It really shouldn't be. But apparently for this offense, it is, because they only totaled 159 yards on 49 plays. It's insanity. It's amazing to me because Jones actually has the ability to stretch the field like we saw on the Tate play. And also, by the way, he almost completed another deep ball to Tate that was dropped. I don't know if that was dropped. It was a difficult catch.
It was a difficult catch. Yeah. It was well contested by Byron Murphy. Sure. And it was also in the sun. So there was a couple things going up against Golden Tate on that specific play. Jones also had that deep dagger route to Sterling Shepard late in the game. That was one of his last
really
throws.
Nice throw.
That was a really nice throw in tight coverage. So Jones still makes good throws. It's just, like Dan said, if you want him to secure that right to be called that long-term franchise quarterback, he has to come up bigger in certain spots.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's more than he has to come up bigger. He has to be generating more offense in total. Mm. You can't have these consistent 150-yard passing games. It's just, you're not going to win in the NFL when you're scoring the 31st most points in the NFL. You can try to grind. We can get all excited about these wins against Seattle, but it's not a very consistent formula. You see it with the Steelers tonight, who are in total collapse mode right now. Their offense cannot move the football anymore. They couldn't move it against Washington. They lost that game. They couldn't move it against Buffalo. They lost that game. And now that their defense isn't playing lights out every week, they're not winning football games. You have to score points in this league. Hmm. I do agree that I like the idea of being the more physical team. I like the idea of defense carrying to the playoffs, running game to a small extent, but you need to score points in this league, and this Giants offense right now is not capable, at least at this time, of scoring points. They didn't score that many points against Cincinnati, though they did move the ball well. But again, not that many points. Washington and Philly, they didn't really ultimately score that many points in those games. They won those games with defense. And obviously Seattle, they won with defense. This game, the defense played their heart out in the first half. They're on the field too much. You can't be on the field for 79 plays on defense and expect to play great football the entire time. It's just not, it's not realistic to me. And that brings me, I guess, to point you mentioned when you came up with the intro here, which is, you know, where do they go from here when it comes to Jones? Because clearly he's not at 100%. I don't think necessarily they risked re-injury or that he got re-injured by playing today, but I also don't necessarily think that there's any kind of magic formula right now to heal him. So what's the plan now? Because like you said, that deep dagger route to Shepard was really nice toward the end of the game. The two deep balls, none of those are throws that Colt McCoy can make. And if Colt McCoy comes in the game, they're not winning any more of these games in my mind. They'll lose to Cleveland with McCoy. They'll lose to Ravens, and they might lose to Dallas. They might win these games. They might pull a Seattle, but it's so, the margin of error is so, to try to win a game like they won in Seattle, you need to be hit high variance plays, and the margin of error is so small. So where do you stand right now with what they should do with Jones?
With Jones, you have to evaluate it day by day, see how he feels. It doesn't give me a warm and fuzzy because he exited this game, but that was also because it was a blowout. But I think you just have to evaluate it day by day to see if he's going to be ready for that Sunday night football bout against a pretty good Cleveland Browns team. Before we continue with this podcast, let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors in a tone that won't make your ears bleed. 2020 has already reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be their most efficient, which means every hire is critical. Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world, with more total visits than any other job site, according to ComScore. Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly, so you can focus on hiring the person you need to keep your business going. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control of payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need. You can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. And now, Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria that you can contact the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire, all one word. This is their best offer available, anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. All one word. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply. Due to a lack of natural athleticism or commitment or overbearing sports parents, fewer than 1% of 1% of 1% of people will ever play professional football. But instead of entering the NFL, they've joined another league, the League of Football Watchers. This football season will be different. You could say that again. And Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day, no matter how you watch. Because right now, having a nice ice-cold Pepsi will make your football watching experience that much greater. It will take it to the next level, and sometimes the next level is what you need to unlock a great day. Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through any game, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watchers.
Is that, can we credit this one up to just great job by Vance Joseph and that staff? Because remember, like I said 2 weeks ago, this was the game I was more worried about than Seattle, because it wasn't just that Arizona was able to chew up the Giants in the run game last year. They really stifled Jones last season. Jones did not, with the exception of that seam ball to Red Ellison, Jones did not really move the ball at all that game. It was one of his worst games last year.
I think he was sacked 8 times in that game.
And he was sacked 8 times in that game as well, like you just said. So my question is, how can you attack? Like you said, I mean, the mistake Zeitler are making, we hadn't seen all season. Obviously, you can talk about Lemieux, who we've seen some bad reps of, and Thomas earlier this season. But what do you take away from this performance by the offensive line?
I think they did a lot of exotic stunts, a lot of exotic twists at the line of scrimmage. And I don't have the All-22 yet, so yeah, it's going to be hard for me to really declare. But it seemed like they were doing a really good job pressing vertical, getting that tackle to open up, and then just coming very quickly underneath that penetrating tackle end stunt. The end would come underneath the penetrating tackle into a basically wide open A gap, because the guard was sucked so far up that penetrating defensive player that he could not transition off in time to get to that looping end. I saw that twice with Kevin Zeitler, where it just was not a smooth transition. I think it was the way that the Arizona Cardinals timed it. I think it was the way that they sold just a normal pass rush. I think it was a couple of those different things.
It was also some really exotic type of stunts that we're going to have to get into the All-22 to see what exactly happened.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, well, obviously, we're going to both be clamoring for this All-22 from that standpoint. I don't think either of us are excited to watch this All-22. We were really hoping for the best. As Nick said before the game, you know, the Giants do a lot better when my expectations are low, so maybe I need to go back to bringing my expectations back a bit lower. I'm definitely the more pessimistic of the two of us as far as, you know, where this Giants roster is at and just the franchise with the Gettleman, Jones, Garrett's quo going forward. But because, again, like I said, I'm very confident the trio is going to be back next year for at least one more year, and we'll see where it goes. But I look at this game, the offensive line took a major step back. I thought Jones took a step back, but again, how much of an excuse can we make for him playing through an injury? It's so hard to tell. I mean, some of the mistakes he made, though, are not injury-based. Like him missing Deion Lewis, he's now, what, 20 games into his career, 20 started games, more than 20 games, 20-plus games. I don't have the exact number in my head. Don't bash me for that, ladies and gentlemen. But at this point, he's got to start making those reads. I mean, you just can't miss wide-open plays. Like, that was a big play in this game. If he hits Lewis there, it's a minimum 50-yard gain. There was wide-open green. I mean, Lewis doesn't have the kind of speed to go to the house there, but it was wide-open for big gain. And then, obviously, earlier in the game, it seemed like Jason Garrett, in my mind, went too quickly away from Wayne Gallman in this game. Early in the game, Wayne Gallman was creating big plays in the run game. He finished with just 12 carries, but he finished for 57 yards, averaging nearly 5 yards per carry. So my question for you is, did they kind of bail from, or I guess it's not the best question, they kind of bail from the game plan, or did you think that they didn't feature enough of Gallman in this game?
Well, on that 7-play touchdown drive in the second quarter, they did use Gallman. Gallman looked good. I feel like the offense got off to such a crappy start because of the strip sack fumble, yeah, and then the Deion Lewis fumbling, and then they were down. And they weren't even down by that much. I mean, they went in the halftime down 13-0, so it wasn't anything astronomical. But then the defense capitulated a little bit, allowed a touchdown. You're down 20-0, and the Giants mounted the drive due to that deep pass to Golden Tate that he secured on the 1-yard line that led to the Deion Lewis touchdown. I don't necessarily think it was just them getting away. I think the game just kind of got away with from them, but I don't think it was them necessarily straying too far away from Wayne Gallman. Like I said, though, when I saw Alfin for that one play and they ran the ball and they were kind of not in an up-tempo mode where they probably should have been. I was like, come on, I think that's a spot where you need to put your best guns out there. You should probably have Wayne Gallman out there, but that wasn't the case.
Yeah, I didn't think they went to tempo fast enough. I didn't think the biggest issue I had with this game plan, and this is weird because he had started to do a better job of this, Garrett, and he still doesn't do a very good job of it compared to the rest of the NFL, or at least the best play callers, but there was almost no pre-snap motion and misdirection used at all in this game plan. It was the most vanilla from that standpoint. It was extremely vanilla. There were no end-arounds to Shepard, which we've seen work well. There was none of those throwback screens or throwback throws with the receiver. There was very little pre-snap and motion and misdirection in this game plan. It was a very straightforward attack. Utilizing a lot of the route concepts Jones was comfortable with in this system, at least. Obviously, he grew comfortable with a very different form of passing game with Pat Shurmur that, again, I think he did a much better job of, and the proof was in the pudding. He had 24 passing touchdowns last year, 12 interceptions, more than 600 more yards in the same amount of games, and the Giants were, 18th in scoring versus 31st? But again, it was that was what I thought. Did you feel that way? I guess I should ask like this. Did you feel that way? A little disappointed in the lack of misdirection and pre-snap motion?
Yeah, I definitely think that's fair. At the same time, I wonder, now this doesn't necessarily, shouldn't be assigned to the lack of pre-snap motion, but I do wonder how Garrett's game plan changed off the injury. I think that's a fair assessment to see, especially as the game went on. We don't know, Jones could come off at the second drive and be like, yeah, it's tightening up a little bit. You know, we don't really exactly know. Maybe he had other play calls, and I'm just kind of playing devil's advocate here. Maybe he had more creative play calls that they couldn't really necessarily get to. But, I mean, you knew you were going into this game with a hobbled Daniel Jones anyway, so that could be unlikely. Just trying to play a little bit of devil's advocate. But, dude, it was just ugly in the sense that how many plays did the Giants run in the first half?
Not many.
Like 23, maybe?
I don't have the number in front of me, but they started with the fumble. That was a five-play drive where they actually looked like they were moving the ball decently and then fumbled. Then a punt after three plays, a punt after five plays, a punt after three plays. So 2 3 and outs, one first down in those next three possessions.
It's like 25 plays.
And another fumble on the kickoff. Yeah. And then obviously to end before the half, they had another six plays. Or I'm sorry, another nine plays. They had a three and out and then one drive that got one for 20 yards. It was inept. This offense was completely inept. And you know, some people on Twitter have asked me, like, what the hell is happening with Darius Slayton? What's bad with him? And I told them, like, for the most part, from what I've seen on Darius Slayton on tape, he's doing a pretty good job creating separation this year. I don't really put this on Slayton. I mean, I don't know if you feel any differently. To me, the biggest issue with this offense, to me, is the passing, is the design. And I remain that way. The three games kind of put me off a little bit. Like, who was Garrett starting to figure it out? Was it just the O-line? Blah, blah, blah. But, you know, you see a lot of teams that don't exactly have the best protection, but it's just a totally different design. The idea of their passing game is not to just get to the sticks and keep everything so congested and in the same spot. It's to open up the field. It's to stretch the seams. It's to challenge the defenses vertically. And
I feel like Garrett does that sometimes, though, dude.
He does, but like I'm talking their whole design is that. Like, the majority of their passing plays are stretching the field and putting the pressure on the
Giants run a lot of quick
over and over. Yeah. And the Giants just their design is mostly not that. He does mix it in sometimes really well. And that's why we started to get excited. He did it against Philly, Washington, Cincinnati. We saw some examples of it at times, but I just can't let these examples overrule the overall product. And 31st in scoring speaks for itself. A total ineptitude. Like, yes, Daniel Jones couldn't move the ball with it. I'm sorry, couldn't move with his legs. But like you said, the Shepard dig, the ball to Tate, his arm was still there. Yeah. He still had the arm to move.
He was able to drive.
He was able to drive the football with that hamstring injury. And that means he was able to drive it vertically. And yet, when you're only mixing in a few plays a game, four, five, six, seven plays like that with the double verts or with the four vert concepts, it's a different style of passing game. And I guess the quick game is okay to some extent. I liked it better when it was the Pat Shurmur version of it with the mesh routes and trying to create separation and confusion with the defense rather than kind of bunching up in one spot and throwing all these curls and stick type stuff. But it is what it is at this point. This is the offense. I think at this point, it should not be a foregone conclusion that Jason Garrett gets another year here. I think if you're an owner of a football team, or you're a head coach, Joe Judge, or you're Dave Gettleman, a GM, I don't know who ultimately makes this decision, and I'm sure it's all them together, you need to consider that they have the 31st ranked offense, and yet they've made investments on the offense year after year after year. Will Hernandez at 34, Andrew Thomas at 4, They traded for Kevin Zeitler. They drafted another lineman who's playing decent, Shane Lemieux. Darius Slayton's playing pretty well. They signed Sterling Shepard. They signed Golden Tate. They drafted Evan Ingram in the first round. It's not like he's working with nothing here. And it's not like the Giants' offense is working with nothing here. This is not an offense to me that should be 31st in the NFL in scoring.
I think it's definitely fair to say that you should consider it. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion, nor do I think it should be a foregone conclusion, but I think you should always consider it when you're a team that has a subpar offense. I think that's always something that you should do. No one should ever become complacent in anything, really, in life, but especially in this, because if you do have the 31st ranked offense, why would you not consider it? And that's not me saying that he should be out. I know that's the popular thing to say right now. I'm not necessarily saying that, but I do think if, say, Jay Gruden or another kind of offensive coordinator that Joe Judge may have some kind of past with, if he becomes available and he's a better fit, then you should definitely explore that. Now, I know that comes into the whole thing. Do you really want Daniel Jones learning another vernacular, learning his third offense? And no, necessarily I don't. But if it's going to benefit him in the long run and benefit this team in the long run, then I definitely think that's something you have to explore.
And that's the crux of it, isn't it, really, Nick?
I mean, it is.
That's the total crux of it right now. It's a double-edged sword. It's on one end, you're asking a quarterback, a young quarterback, to learn his fourth system in 4 years. If you consider, you know, he didn't have to learn that Duke system his last year there, but it was a new system. So be in his fourth system, 4 years. On the other hand, if this specific system doesn't fit this quarterback skill set, you're just treading water and wasting time by going back to him just to give the guy another year in the same system. It's why I kind of wanted them desperately to sign Gruden in a lot of ways, because I saw a lot of what Gruden does in his passing game and what Pat Shurmur did. I want to try to keep it as close as possible to what Shurmur gave Jones last year. I didn't want to do a total reboot like this seems to be with Garrett. I mean, I don't see much at all of what Shurmur did in Garrett's system when I watch this team on offense. Do you?
I mean, I think a lot of offenses have a lot of similar concepts. It's how you employ the concepts. And no, I would say that Shurmur's offense was much more mesh heavy. It was much more half field read, quick read, which you do see in Jason Garrett. So from that standpoint, actually, I would say yes, but they are different identities, especially when in terms of rushing the football. Well, I mean,
well, from
Pat
that
Shurmur,
I just mean the passing game though.
Oh,
for now.
Yeah, from the passing. I mean, yes, I think concepts are sort of universal around the NFL. Everyone uses similar concepts,
but there seemed to be a lot more mesh in Pat Shurmur's offense.
Absolutely, yes, yeah. And that was a staple. That was a staple.
That was the staple, and versus this staple, which you've said
would be stick. Yes.
So stick versus mesh for me. I'm just team mesh.
Spacing concepts in general, and when teams, like we've brought it up several times in the podcast, but I'll say it again to beat the dead horse. When teams sniff out your spacing concepts, which are just basically, you know, five curls, four curls across the field, and they sit on that, then that's going to be a problem because they can get to the catch point, disrupt the catch point, especially when you have players like Evan Ingram who aren't really necessarily great at securing the football, and that's caused, what, three interceptions? At least,
plus some close ones, versus mesh, where if they're playing man, you can sometimes get natural picks that create big plays after the catch. If they're playing zone, you can get to a point where you can sit in the zone on the mesh. And it's not just that. I feel like the staples that you talked about, like you just said earlier, the third and five play where the Fox broadcast crew, which did a much better job this week, by the way. Let's just mention that because we were harsh on the crew last week. They showed the all-22 angle of that, and there was literally no routes breaking into the middle of the field.
And, well, that's a play we see a lot, too.
And we've seen that play a lot.
It's a whip route outside with a seven corner over the top, and then on the backside it's a vert. And we see that play a lot. There's nothing over the middle of the field, which isn't great. What I would like to see a little bit more from Jason Garrett in terms of route concept that we did see in Shurmur, to kind of go back to what we were just talking about, is just a simple drag. It doesn't even have to be a mesh concept, which is two drags, you know, with the motion, the mosh. It could just be a drag route. And that's all you need, because that's going to create horizontal spacing. It can act as a clear out, and it's a check down option.
Yeah.
You see that very common in air raid offenses with stuff like the Arizona Cardinals. You see it all the time in Mike Leach. Basically, almost every passing play, Mike Leach at Mississippi State has a drag route implemented because it's an easy check down. It's an quick completion. Get the ball into someone like Evan. Think about the touchdown pass to Evan Ingram against Tampa Bay last year. What was that? It was a drag route. The dude took 70 yards.
Yes, and he did it against Washington a couple years ago, or it was either last year or 2 years back. He took a similar route. And it fits his skill set very well.
Absolutely. And it's perfect for high-low type of concepts because you have a drag route. So then you have a linebacker. Oh, no, I got Evan Ingram dragging in front of me. Let me go bounce on that. Behind him, you hit him with a dig, a deeper post kind of route, and then you can open up more space on the field.
Yeah. So it's a different way to open up space on the field.
Yes, and that's what it's all about in offense, man, is feel like sometimes we don't necessarily
see that as consistently as we need to in this specific offense, probably a big reason why we are 31st.
I think it is a huge reason why we're 31st, and I think it fits. I think the issue with it is we can argue all we want about the conceptual idea of it, what type of style we like better, the using stick for your quick game or using mesh and drags for your quick game. That can be an argument that I bet other people qualified could say, you know what, actually, I think Jason Garrett has a good idea for this because X and X. But what you can't really say is that Jones is better with stick versus mesh, because Jones has now enough tape in last year's offense versus this year's offense to show that he threw great balls on those mesh concepts and those drags. He put the ball in a really good spot for Yak. There were tons of plays that we saw on tape last year that we talked about throughout the year on our All 22 reviews that we said, damn, that was really good placement by Jones, where not all quarterbacks would put in that spot to maximize the yards after the catch. And I feel like in this offense, I have not seen enough design routes that maximize yard after the catch based on where the ball's placed. And I don't know if that's an issue with Jones, but more so it seems like it's an issue with the route concepts. We haven't turned many of these stick routes into big plays after the catch at all, for starters. And it just seems like there hasn't been many huge Yak plays all season long in this offense.
I think that's a fair statement. I really do.
Yeah. And that's tough because Jones, one of his best skills last year was putting the ball in spots for Yak.
Yes.
And that's, in general, one of, if he's going to be the franchise quarterback, which I remain completely unsold on, and that doesn't mean I don't think he will be, but it just means all you people who went nuts on me when I said the 2 of 10 thing are just not listening to what it really means. It's hard to say with certainty this guy's going to be here in 5 years when he doesn't throw any touchdown passes and the offense is 31st in the NFL. Like, on one end, I am blaming this offensive system, but we have to look ourselves in the mirror and also ask if this is a Daniel Jones problem.
That's a fair assessment. I would also, and I know you and I have talked about this, and I think you've been very fair with this too, Daniel Jones, I mean, the reason why Wayne Gallman has as many touchdowns as he has is more of a byproduct of Daniel Jones' success. If literally a lot of these plays were a yard or 2 yards more, they would be touchdowns and they would be accredited to Daniel Jones. So that's just to be fair, but at the same time, I'm right where I was at. I'm still at 5 with Daniel Jones. I think that's a fair assessment. I think it's an objective assessment of Jones because we can't be 100% sure. But at the same time, I'm not willing to throw him to the wind. I know you're not either, but no. We just need to see more, and we need to see more consistency from the show.
And I'm probably up to like 3 or 4, or probably 4, because I like that stretch of what he showed on tape in the 3 games before this one. I thought he showed really good signs of the things he was struggling with and improved on. But, at the same time, at some point we do have to look ourselves in the mirror. We can't just keep burying every excuse around. We can't make every excuse around him. The offensive coordinator, the lack of skill players, the offensive line, because at some point you have to transcend that. I don't honestly think that Justin Herbert, for example, is working with too much over there in LA. I don't really feel like
he has more than Jones, but like they're just different.
He has better receivers than Jones, but that O-line is an absolute disaster right now in Los Angeles and has been all season. So the Giants offensive line, we thought, was turning a corner.
Definitely.
And at the very least,
this game,
we'll have to see what happened in this game with the offense. All right, let's talk a little bit about the defense, Nick, and I want to start with the pass rush. Last week, the Giants did an excellent job of slowing down the Seattle Seahawks offense by getting pressure with their front four. They had a similar strategy this week, but it didn't exactly work against a slightly upgraded offensive line from Seattle, but certainly not a premier offensive line. What do you attribute to the struggles the Giants had generating a pass rush this game?
I mean, it would have to definitely kind of dive into it to see from all 22 standpoint, but just from the broadcast, it seemed like the stunts and the pressure packages from 4-man that Patrick Graham was employing, they just weren't working. They were being blocked up. The transitions were much smoother than they were against the Seattle Seahawks. I mean, Dalvin Tomlinson had the one sack, but sacking Kyler Murray only one time. We've seen Murray be rattled by teams like the New England Patriots in the past, and for whatever reason, the Giants couldn't do anything with 4-man. The loss of Darnay Holmes probably affected the slot, maybe affected what they were going to bring as a blitzer. I'm not really 100% sure what the pressure percentage was in this game. I would definitely need to probably rewatch the film. I mean, getting pressure on Kyler Murray in general and sacking him and corralling him is difficult enough. There was a couple times where I felt like you saw Dexter Lawrence in the pocket chasing him, but it's like, okay, that's never going to be a winning battle by any means. So I would really just probably have to get to the film to see why these stunts and why these pressure packages and what kind of pressure packages they were and why they didn't work.
Yeah, and at the same time, like you said, I mean, they looked like they had a game plan to try and contain Murray. They had some plays with spies in there. They had, you know, you saw a play where Carter Coughlin had contained, lost contained, but it's really hard to keep contained against Kyler Murray. I think at this stages of their career, Russell Wilson, to me, from what I've seen on tape from him this year, especially in that Giant game, his athleticism has taken a little bit of a notch down. I think it might be that he's playing through an injury. It might just be the wear and tear of a season, but it's not the same as Kyler Murray. It's not really even close.
I don't think it was ever close.
It probably wasn't ever close, yeah.
Yeah.
But at this point, Murray is just a completely different player to contain. If that's your game plan to try to contain him like they did against Russell really well, it didn't really work in this game. I'm not saying it was a bad game plan by Graham. That's not what I'm trying to say. I'm just saying it's probably the only thing you can try to do against Murray, but you still have to hit. You still have to pretty much hope for things to break your way to contain him. And he had, what, 8, 9, 10 rushing attempts in this game? I believe he actually finished the game with 13 rushing attempts. So obviously it was part of their game plan going into this game. They watched that Seattle game tape and they said, we can probably chew up a few yards, keep the clock churning by just some design, easy quarterback runs that we're not going to try to break for 15 or 20, but we'll take the 4 or 6 they're giving us.
Yeah. And a lot of those were just Kyler Murray, I think, improvising too. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's nothing downfield. Cause you have guys like James Bradbury and you have the solid covering defenders that the Giants have on the back end of their defense. And then he was like, okay, well, I have this green grass in front of me, I'm just gonna take advantage of that. So
yeah, and I think, like, it's not like the Giants had any kind of massive breakdown from their run defense this week. Like, you may think, like, oh, you know, Blake Martinez, was he playing hurt, so would it affect the entire defense? I mean, with the exception of that 36 yard gain, Kenyon Drake had 22 carries for, what was it, 54 yards, with the exception of that 36-yard gain. So they really just totally stymied the Cardinals' interior running game. And Jay Simmons, by the way, did a little bit better, but not too much. And so it seemed like that wasn't really – they didn't really take a step back there. It just really they weren't able to do what they were able to do against Seattle for the extended period, which was generate pressure with the front four or cover so well in the back end that nothing's open. And they did do it a lot in the first half. They had the goal line stand, which is a huge credit to this defense. And besides that, they almost got them to a point where they held another stop in the red zone, but then Kyler Murray just made an otherworldly play where the pressure got there. He was falling off his back foot, about to get sacked, and drops the ball over the top of the defense in a perfect spot for the tight end Dan Arnold to make the catch for the touchdown. I mean, that could have been a field goal right there. So I don't really – we'll see on the All-22, but I don't think I'm going to come away from this one having too much to knock the defense for.
Neither do I, especially when you consider how many plays they had to be out there for in the first half of the game. They were dead tired because the offense couldn't sustain any type of drives.
And with the exception of DeAndre Hopkins, no one got going at all for this Cardinals passing game. Dan Arnold, 2 receptions, 27 yards. Chase Edmonds was their next leading receiver, 4 for 21. They got nothing from Max Williams, who we thought could be a threat in this. They got nothing from Christian Kirk. And they got nothing from Larry Fitzgerald for the most part, 2 for 10, 3 for 14. So really it was just that kind of middle intermediate area where Hopkins does his best work right now, especially in this offense. And a lot of that is just the pressure wasn't there with the front four, and eventually, you know, you're going to get open in a zone if you're a receiver like DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, and there was one play, too, where I think the deepest pass to DeAndre Hopkins, whatever gain that was, where Tay Crowder probably didn't get the necessary depth in his drop. Could have got high load by an underneath route, maybe a drag route, because this is an air raid type of system, and him not having that depth allowed DeAndre Hopkins to get that huge gain that was kind of one of the daggers in the Giants' hearts.
Yeah, and then there was the 20-yard ball he threw to Dan Arnold, like not the touchdown, the 20-yard pass. Hmm. It was just a rip by Murray. He threw it over the top of the Giants' zone and in between the safety. And that's just like beautiful arm talent, the velocity and the placement on that, and to get it and the trajectory to get it over the defense. And that's just going to happen when you're facing a quarterback with his kind of talent. So I don't come away from this one too discerned with the defense. I'll say that. If you guys are looking for positives from this game, it's that I don't think the defense took some kind of major step back. It's just that you can't ask them to have a game like Seattle every week where they completely carry a team. It worked one time against Seattle. It's not going to work every week. The offense can't put up 159 yards and expect to win. It's just never going to work in today's NFL. It's not going to work in any NFL, I don't think.
No, and it shouldn't work either. And again, even if the Giants came away with that fumble from Kenyon Drake, what is that going to do? Like, the Giants aren't going to be able to mount an offense and drive with a hobbled Daniel Jones and absolutely no momentum from the offense. You would hope that would be some kind of spark, but it was to go back to what I said in the beginning of the podcast, Dan, it was a very disappointing game for sure.
It was, and just from the overall standpoint, obviously we all came into this week with a lot of hope, a lot of expectations. There was a lot of you know, optimism in the Giants community. I love the conversations we had with a lot of you during the week on Twitter. I love the fact that, you know, we saw a nice uptick in our downloads this week, which is always a good thing. And there's a reason why. This was the most optimistic Giants fans had to be about this roster in a really long time, and for good reason. They really had an excellent victory against the Seattle Seahawks. But ultimately, overall, this was a nice come down to, or not a nice, this was a realistically, this was a come down to earth game, and they have to see where they're at now. So let's take a look and preview that playoff picture right now, because it got a lot more convoluted after this week's games. Obviously, at the time of when it happened, I didn't know for sure if that Washington win over Pittsburgh was going to really haunt the Giants, because I felt they had enough momentum to come away with a win against Arizona, and they kind of controlled their own destiny. They no longer controlled their own destiny because Nick Mullins threw a disgusting pick six.
Oh, he's so trash, bro.
Nick Pilato is not a fan of Nick Mullins. Let me just make one thing clear. Nick Pilato is not a fan of Nick Mullins.
That was a very disappointing game to watch as well.
It was extremely disappointing because the Niners could have won that game if not for a forced fumble recovery for a touchdown and a pick six. They literally spotted the Washington football team 14 points, and then they had to go to Haskins, who nearly threw a back-breaking interception, but it didn't matter by that point because the defense had scored so many points. Whatever, they won that game. Then the Eagles somehow figured out a way to pull out a win against the Saints, which is just turned this day into an even bigger disaster for the Giants. So here's how it looks right now. Washington's a game up on the Giants, and they play the following teams: Seattle next week at home in Washington, Carolina after that, a team that is really on the ropes, not playing good football, had a nice start to the season but have been decimated by some bad injuries, and just they're just not playing well right now as a young team. And then at Philly, which is interesting, they're one game up on the Giants. The Giants have Cleveland, at Baltimore, Dallas. At this point, I feel like the Giants need to win at minimum two of these three, because even if they do win two of these three, then they need Washington to lose two of their three. And it's going to be I could see them losing to Seattle, but then Carolina, Philly, I guess they could potentially lose to Philly that last week. So let's say, best case scenario, Giants win two of the next three, which would include a Dallas win. So they split with Cleveland and Baltimore, which is going to be a tall task to begin with a hobbled Daniel Jones. But let's see. Maybe it's possible. In that scenario, the Eagles, who are now a half game back from the Giants, hopefully you're following us right now, have Arizona in Arizona next week. So that's, who knows what to make of that game. This Arizona team hopefully is hitting its stride, and this is a sign of things to come, and we can at least bank on that. But then they have Dallas, and then they finish up with Washington. So if they lose to Arizona and they beat Dallas, they'll go into that last game with only 5.5 wins. So at that point, if you're following us, the Giants will have six, and they'll be one game ahead of the Eagles, to the point where it'll be a simple scenario for the Giants. They'll need to beat Dallas, and they'll need Philly to beat Washington. Ultimately, what it's going to come down to is the Giants are going to need want to win one of these two games against Cleveland and Baltimore, without a doubt, and they're going to need Philly to ultimately to beat Washington, but also to lose to Arizona next week, because if Philly beats Arizona and beats Dallas and beats Washington, Philly gets in over the Giants, unless, of course, the Giants can win out against Cleveland, in Baltimore, and then Dallas. So if your head's not spinning right now, mine is, even from going over that, Nick. Where do you feel right now about the playoff?
I don't feel confident at all, to be honest. If I'm going to be real, I mean, you have Philadelphia and Washington playing each other. You have Philadelphia right on our coattails here, and the Giants have Cleveland, Baltimore, and Dallas. I mean, I would say out of the four teams, the Giants have the hardest schedule right now.
Without a doubt. Yeah, it's not even, I don't even think it's a debate.
Yes. I mean, you look at Dallas, even. They got San Francisco, who is an atrocious team led by Nick frickin' Mullins. They should turn to CJ Beathard.
He gives a bad name to Knicks.
Yes. He's a professional athlete who's probably a millionaire, despite the fact that he was, like, I don't even know if he was drafted. He was a late round pick. But he gives a bad name to our Knicks right now because he beat the Giants and he's losing to teams like Washington. But then you have Dallas, man. I mean, they get that Nick Mullins game, possibly, maybe CJ Beathard. Then they have Philly. And if they win against San Francisco, and then they beat Philadelphia, and the Giants don't win against Cleveland, this is looking like the Giants could be the last team in the division.
They could potentially finish last in the division, for sure. That is without a doubt in the picture. They could easily Cleveland is a really good football team right now. Like,
I know,
to expect the Giants to beat Cleveland is going to be real, with a hobble Jones, is going to be tough. I mean, like, it was not. The Cleveland is a better team than Arizona. Cleveland's been slept on all season. They're basically what the Giants are, but a much better version, in my mind, of what the Giants are.
I would say the Giants' defense is better.
Yeah, the Giants' overall defense is better, yeah. But they're not even anywhere near them on offense. And no. But just from the, I just mean from the physical standpoint, they want to be this physical team that wins at the point of attack. So that's going to be tough. And then at Baltimore, Baltimore's starting to kind of re-hit that stride. But I feel like they have a weird chance to potentially keep up there. I think they can kind of slow down Lamar Jackson and do a good job against him in the passing game. We'll see if I'm right about that, but I kind of feel decently optimistic about that.
In Baltimore is the thing that kind of scares me for whatever reason. Even though there's not fans, it's
even
still
not the fan. But ultimately, you're right. I mean, every scenario at this point is in play for the New York Giants football team, from first in the division to last in the division. And if they do fall into last in the division, it'll probably be somewhere around the 8th or 9th or 10th pick in the 2021 NFL draft. And then it gets into an interesting range of outcomes, and we'll talk about all that in the offseason, of course. Hopefully it doesn't come to that. Hopefully the Giants can still pull this out for everyone's sake. We all want to see Jones get some experience in the playoffs. I think that's most important for me, seeing Daniel Jones take a playoff snap and seeing if he has any of that Eli Manning magic in him. I mean, let's be honest. Eli Manning was a considerably better quarterback in the playoffs than the regular season. He had something in him, something innate in him that came out. Now, to be fair to Eli Manning versus Daniel Jones, Eli Manning also had that at various times in his career and throughout his career, even before those playoff runs and during and after those playoff runs in regular seasons, where he had that in the fourth quarter of games. Daniel Jones has not put that on tape, with the exception of that Bucs drive that he led for a touchdown that Slayton, to be quite honest, bailed him out of on that fourth down, where he fell backwards in the pocket and threw it behind and Slayton made a great play. He hasn't had that kind of magic yet, but I want to see if he has that in the playoffs. So that's why I want to see if he can get there. But, you know, it's an open-ended book right now. And ultimately, we'll see what happens, but it looks a lot grimmer, unfortunately, than where it was at.
Literally, 12 hours ago, it looked so much it looked so much better than what
it is.
There
was so much hope for this team just 12 hours ago, unless you were Vegas, and Vegas still had the Cardinals as favorites, so maybe they knew something was up. But listen, good or bad, we're going to be here to give you the analysis. We got all 22 breakdowns coming this week. We may have a little special surprise. I know we tease special surprises a lot. Some may be better than others. This one, if it comes through, and I don't want to jinx it by saying what it is yet, is going to be the best thing in my mind that we've ever had on the Big Blue Banter podcast. So just keep in mind, later this week, around Thursday or Friday, if all things go according to plan, we've got a special treat episode for you on the Big Blue Banter podcast. But on that note, we're going to wrap up the quick reaction takeaway show, and we're going to first do so by thanking all of the people who poured in this week and gave us ratings and reviews on iTunes. I know we ask for them a lot, and I really thank all of you who take the time to go to iTunes and give us a rating review. Even some of you who honestly have not downloaded iTunes before or don't have any usage for iTunes, you use other platforms for your music, for your phone. The fact that you went and downloaded just to give us a rating review really says a lot and really means a lot to us. Last week, we were talking about getting to that 400 mark. We've surpassed that 400 mark thanks to you guys who have taken the time. And we're really at an excellent number of ratings right now. If it wasn't for the fact that I want more ratings to help us grow this show, I would really be content with where we're at right now. We're at 420 ratings, 420. It's a great number of ratings to be at.
Why do you think that's a great number, Dan?
Really, really excellent stuff, you know. I'm a big fan of that number.
It really makes you feel like you're on top of the world, like you're just high up there, you know?
Exactly, you know, it's just a good number to be at. But I want to thank some of you, and like I said, I promised I will definitely read some of these. So I want to start by thanking DC Ken. I hope I pronounced your name right. Giants diehard. You guys are kind of nerds, but the podcast content is very well done. I respect that review, DC Ken, because guess what? You know what? We are kind of nerds. I'll admit it. I am definitely more than kind of nerd. When it comes to football, I'm a massive nerd. When it comes to real life, I'm probably more than a kind of nerd. I'm a big fan of shows like Rick and Morty. I like sci-fi. I like weird things that people would consider weird or nerdy. So, yeah, I'll take that review.
Honestly, one thing I got to say that I disagree with you. Rick and Morty is not nerdy, in my opinion.
Okay. Sci-fi?
It's sci-fi, but that show is so clever, which I guess you could say is nerdy, but it's so dark and funny at the same time.
Oh, it's the best. I mean,
it's such a great show.
It's so well done. Rick and Morty is, especially season one. I mean, it's season two had some great hits as well. The past few seasons have been great because they're Rick and Morty, and you still get some of the great banter there and some of the jokes, but season one had just clever episode after clever episode, just incredible storyline writing by Dan Harmon and Justin Roiland. But Yeah, so I'll take that. You know what? Maybe I'm not a nerd, but no, I definitely am a nerd. GGheim. Oh man, this could be one of my worst pronunciations ever.
Dude, I'm gonna like take that sound clip, but just before every podcast, we're gonna do Jime.
Hey, Junior Jime 10 said, "Awesome pod. Really appreciate you guys with your analysis and willingness to adapt your takes as you get more information. And finally, keep the megapods coming. I love the hour plus Giants banter. Thank you for doing it. L Money. Big name, big time name. Really enjoy the podcast, the post game, and all 22 analysis you guys give each week. I like that you make it entertaining and easy to listen to, whether you are someone with high football knowledge or someone new to the game. I don't love when you talk about your lives because I would prefer to think you don't do anything other than watch film, but no one is perfect."
I love that. That's a great review.
That was a great review. Let's see who else threw us one this week. Big J Murph says, "An awesome pod. I've been following Dan's content for years. It's always smart, opinionated, entertaining. This pod is no different. I wonder why I decided to read this one." Nah, just messing. This is kind of random. "But great for fans looking to dive into the X's and O's. Everyone should give this pod a listen. Murph." Thank you, Murph. And to everyone else who stepped in and delivered us those 5-star ratings this week, I'm really happy, and I really just wanted to thank you. Finally, I want to read one more. Chris from Millbrook, New York says, "Love your podcast. It's been my go-to to get Giants info. I am new to the podcast and stumbled onto it, so thanks for keeping me distracted and informed." I wanted to bring this up because I want to know if you guys are listening, and if you leave a review, you feel free to ask a question. We'll answer it on the pod, but also let us know how you found our podcast. We're always looking to find out how we found new listeners. When, you know, the season carried over from last year, and, you know, we already had a really strong fan base. Some of you guys I know have found our content through my Twitter or through Nick's Twitter, or, you know, just stumbled onto it. But if you are one of the few who are in the latter category and you've stumbled onto it, let us know how you've done it. I'm really curious to hear how our podcast is reaching you and how we can reach more people like you who want to hear this type of content. So simple as that. And lastly, the last thing I'll ask for those of you who haven't done the ratings, reviews, download, subscription, do it. And lastly, follow us on Instagram, NYBigBlueBanter. Our boy Sean is over there killing the content game. I am a big fan of Instagram in general. I probably use it way too much. I've been trying to get the hell off of it, but we are now over 700 followers. He started this page from scratch, and we have 732 followers, which is freaking awesome. We're starting to see some interactions in the comment section. I got to jump on there more and start to talk to you guys. I already use Instagram way too much. It's a big distraction for me, but hopefully I can turn it into some positive by hanging out with you guys on the NY Big Blue Banter account. Anything else you guys want to know from us, hit us up on Twitter as always. Let us know what other kind of content you want to hear in season or outside of season. We've got some big things planned for the offseason as well. On that note, we're going to jump off now. We'll talk to you later this week with both all 22 breakdowns, and hopefully, if all things go according to plan, fingers crossed, a big surprise later in the week.
Football is back in full swing. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word, BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. You have to evaluate it day by day. To me, just watching Daniel Jones, I was saying it. I was like, you got to get him out. He just looked very uncomfortable back there, especially towards the end. And there was a couple of those sacks where, yeah, you can call him coverage sacks. He was holding on to the football. But we've seen in the past Daniel Jones, we've knocked him sufficiently for the times where he did hold on to the football too long. But he also bails a lot in those situations. And he just didn't, because I don't think he had the ability to do so. And that's going to be an issue against any football team, especially when the Cardinals just put on tape the fact that they were able to generate so much pressure with four guys, and the fact that you're not going to really have to play against Daniel Jones's legs if he can't run. You're obviously going to be cognizant of it, but if he shows through the first quarter, the second quarter, that he's not doing it, you don't need to keep any kind of quarterback spy. You can drop to a deeper depth in your zone and play, you know, top-down type of defense.
Yeah, you're 100% right. And I want to touch on something you mentioned as well in your intro, and that's the offensive line play.
Yeah.
My question here is, we had been trending in the very right direction on the offensive line for weeks now, and then this was a major step backward. The Giants gave up 6 sacks with Jones in the game and then 2 with McCoy, so it's not fully to be blamed on, obviously, Jones' lack of mobility. After the game, Wayne Gallman said that the Cardinals give credit to the Cardinals coaching staff. They did things we hadn't seen all season on tape. He didn't go into any specifics. They asked Jones about that same question. They said, Gallman said, the Cardinals did things you guys didn't see on tape. And he's like, you know, all defenses try to do stuff that we don't see type of thing. Kind of cop out, but